I'm speaking today with Silvia Romo, who is running for Congressional District 35, one of the new districts created by the legislature this year. Ms. Romo, my first question is, why are you running for this office?
I'm running because a person of my experience, knowledge, and passion desperately is needed in Washington, D.C. You know, all we have to do is read the papers and look at all the problems that are happening nationally. And I think we need to bring a fresh and a different perspective to Washington to start fixing some of the problems there. And also my concern about the future of our kids and our grandkids. I think that we're heading in a direction that we need to take a serious look, stop, and let's fix it.
Okay. Now, you served two terms in the Texas legislature. Tell me a little bit about what you did and what you'd say was your best accomplishments while you were there.
Well, you know, I really did enjoy being a state representative. I was there for two terms, as I am by training a certified public accountant, and so my focus certainly was in businesses, small businesses, disadvantaged businesses, and so I was put, for a freshman, I was put in some very, very good, powerful committees, for instance, the Ways and Means, Business and Investments, these type of committees that normally freshmen or second-year representatives aren't generally put in there. And, you know, when I first got there, people told me, some of the members there said, okay, little lady, don't worry about having to do too many things too important. You're just going to have to learn from us. Well, the reality was that I was directing a lot of the action and a lot of the activity because of my knowledge and experience in the community, in the areas of taxes and business and financial matters.
Okay. And so, like I said, give me an example of like a bill that you helped pass that you're very proud of.
Well, I had a total of about 90 bills, but the three that sort of stand out in my mind is I was the first freshman legislator to pass a major constitutional amendment. Now, to do that, it requires 100 out of 150 votes. And they had been trying to pass this bill, it was my understanding, for about 8 to 10 years, and they were unable to do that. Somehow, one of the senators gave me the bill in the House and you know, told me to run with it. And lo and behold, I passed the bill. And that was to provide funding for women and disadvantaged businesses, kind of like a state SBA. As we all know, a lot of these small businesses don't have the capital, and this bill would have provided the capital for these businesses in order to succeed. I passed the bill, got 100 votes, and was the first freshman to do so. That was one of my bills. The other bill, if you use an ATM, well, every time you use your ATM, you need to think about me, because my bill set up all of the safety standards at all the ATM machines. That came to me because a person in San Antonio had gotten killed using the ATM machine. And so I reviewed that and set up a bill to enforce a lot of these safety measures that were lacking at that particular time. So now it has become a lot safer to use ATMs because of my bill. So I'm very, very proud of that and hope to think that a lot of lives have been saved because of the safety standards that were established by my legislation. Another bill that I'm really proud of is it prevented some of these businesses from using children to go door-to-door selling merchandise. There was no supervision. You didn't know whose door you were knocking. And a lot of these were minority kids that were picked up from different neighborhoods and just thrown in neighborhoods to go sell whatever from early till very late at night. And there were no rules. The businesses got away with it. So I established bills to prevent that kind of thing and hopefully save some of the children from some maybe being molested by somebody or being taken advantage. So I'm very proud of those bills. Like I said, I passed quite a number of bills, but those are the three that I'm pretty proud of.
Okay. And after your two terms in the legislature, you were elected to the office of tax assessor in Bexar County, which is what you've done up till now. Talk to me about what you've done in that office.
Well, I have completely revamped that office. You know, when I first got elected, there were two things that I told all my employees. I don't want to hear, we've always done it this way, and I don't want to hear, that's not my job. And probably the most important thing that I needed to do is to change the mindset, to change the philosophy of the employees, that we're there to serve the public, not the other way around. And I am very proud to say that we have completely changed that. I get letters from the taxpayers that are praising how well my office is run. In fact, I've had several letters that people saying, God, this doesn't feel like a government office. It feels more like a business. And I think that this is the way a government office should be. We, you know, the public is the ones that are paying to run that office, and we need to treat them like they're the customers. The technology that I put in my office now is completely, you know, brought us up to the 21st century. Education, you know, I want my employees to do well, but I can't expect them if I don't give them the training and the tools, and I have been able to do that, provide them with the training and to give them the tools to be able to provide good customer service.
Okay. Now, I know the tax assessor's office normally mostly handles, you know, state and local business, property taxes, auto registrations, that sort of thing. You know, in what ways have you, as tax assessor, you know, interacted with, you know, the congressional delegation? And, you know, what opportunities do you see, you know, for members of Congress to be more receptive to, you know, county officials such as yourself?
I'm not sure what you're asking me.
Well, I mean, have you, as a matter of course in your job, had to, you know, lobby or ask for something or otherwise work with one or more of the congressional members that serve San Antonio?
Well, I have certainly interacted with a lot of the congressional members in the terms of trying to help our mutual constituents. That I have been able to do. But I've also have been able to help our state representatives in setting up some legislation. Being a former legislator, I saw a need, and so I proposed certain legislation that the state legislators have picked up, and I'm very proud that was passed. For instance, if you're a senior, you can defer your taxes if you can't pay it. But if you're disabled, you can't, until I went ahead and formulated that bill and asked the representatives and the senator to be able to pass that bill. So I have been able to interact more closely with our state representatives and senators than I have with congressional. But I see a link, obviously, you know, when you look at federal government and you look at state government and local, they're all interrelated. In some way. And my background as a businesswoman, as a CPA, as a legislator, as an executive, because running the tax office is like running a large corporation, all of my background information and the fact that I am a mother and a grandmother, and of course, obviously, I'm a woman, all these perspectives have given me, I think, a much better insight to be able to go to Congress and to be a very productive member of that group.
Okay. Now, as a member of Congress, what would be your priorities in terms of to help maintain and further the economic recovery? What sort of legislation or policies would you pursue or support to help keep the economic recovery going and help improve it?
Well, you know, this year everything is going to be at a standstill because it's the presidential election. There's not much, in reality, not much that Congress is going to be doing. So the main work is going to be kicked to the next members of Congress the following year. And one big area that's going to be dealt with, of course, is trying to reform the antiquated tax code. That is going to be a very big issue, of which I obviously am very well versed in that. The budget has always been a problem, and of course the federal debt has always been a problem. All those things are going to be all interrelated and will impact everything. It will impact the Medicare, it will impact Social Security, it will impact education. That's going to be the basis for everything that we all hold dear. So I think it's going to be very important as somebody who is well-versed and experienced to be there to be able to help direct some of this legislation to make sure that certain groups of people, like the seniors and the children, are going to be taken care of. You can't just target one area. I think that the areas of economic development, the areas of the budget, the areas of the tax are interrelated. You can't have one without the other. It's a stimulus altogether. Job creation, obviously, that's the holy grail of economic development. You know, if you can get meaningful jobs, then that is a multiplier. They, in turn, then will spend money at the grocery store and so forth. They'll be able to have money to be able to send their kids to school. I think that we as Americans need to become a little more innovative and not do everything that we've done in the past, but look at something different, especially in District 35. There is a lot of opportunity there. Here in San Antonio, we've got the medical center, the health issues. There's a lot of research that is being done that could be partnered and to bring a lot of these products to market. The growth between District 35, between Bexar County and Travis County, is tremendous. And in between, I'd like to see some sort of a rail system established, not only to move people, but to move the freight. We need to look at our balance of trade. Right now, it's serious, where we are importing more products than we are exporting, which means that we're sending more money out than money that's coming in, and that has got to be reversed. Again, everything ties back to the tax code. So I think this is where the basis that needs to be focused, and that is definitely where I will look at.
Well, then let's talk about the tax code. There's been a lot of talk nationally lately about inequalities in the tax code, about the amount of money that people at the top of the economic pyramid pay in taxes versus everybody else. Talk about, not just tax rates, but also various types of exemptions and loopholes and whatnot. What sorts of changes would you like to see made in the tax code, and for what purpose?
Well, I think what has happened, as I mentioned earlier, I think the tax code is very antiquated. And a lot of these tax credits or loopholes, as we call it, have been in place for quite a long time. They were initially put in place for a purpose. And now they don't serve a purpose, but yet they're still there. So you can't unravel one. You need to look at the whole picture before you start unraveling the whole thing. We may need to just unravel everything and start from scratch one. That seems improbable, but in reality, that's probably what needs to be done. There is a problem when the 1% pay a lot less than the 99% of us do. The millionaires, multimillionaires, and I don't have the stats in front of me, but when I read them, I was kind of astonished that you have people in that category and they're paying zero taxes because of all the loopholes that are involved. And I think that we need to seriously look at that. Some criticism is that by having them pay more, it's not going to help the federal debt. Well, it may not get rid of the federal debt, but it certainly will help bring that down. It's like I said, it's all interrelated. You can't. It's not simplistic. Anybody who says it's simplistic, they don't know. But it definitely needs to be changed. I think that the tax code has got to be more fair and equitable. And if the middle class is paying the majority of the tax, that is wrong. even the poor are paying, you know, if they're not paying federal taxes, they're paying on payroll taxes, which is the same as a tax. They're paying 0.0765 of tax, where compare that to zero for some of these millionaires. So there is a lot of inequalities that has definitely have to be addressed. I don't think people mind paying their taxes if they pay their fair share.
Okay. We've been talking about immigration reform in this country for a while, and it seems to be a hard thing to get to. What does comprehensive immigration reform look like to you?
You know, that has been going on for so many years that I don't even know how long it's been. I think that this is an issue that everybody pretends it's not there and hopes it'll go away. It's not going to go away. I think that we need to really seriously look at it. I think that we need to, I definitely support the DREAM Act. To me, that is a win-win situation. You've got kids who know no other life other than being here in the United States. They're no different than your kids or my kids or anybody else's kids. They just happen to be brought here illegally. If they are attending college and or they're serving their country, our country, then definitely they should be given citizenship. I think that this is a starting point that we can do is make sure that the DREAM Act is passed. But we need to be able to look at a comprehensive immigration. I don't think that's the real issue. I think it's easy to point the fingers. I think we seriously need to look at the drug cartels. We're not focusing really on the bigger problem of the drug cartels. That, to me, is a more serious problem and not the illegal immigration. Well, maybe I should say undocumented. It's the correct word, undocumented. But I think we really need to look at the drug movement much closer than anything else as far as talking about the border.
Okay. This year, it seems, there's been a fair amount of attention paid in various forms to issues related to women. You've got the contraceptive mandate that some people are up in arms about, and you've got, women's rights often coming under assault from more from state legislatures, but also from Congress. I imagine that as a woman serving in the Texas legislature 20 years ago, you ran into your fair share of, shall we say, unenlightened attitudes.
Yes, I have.
Speaking from your experience as a woman in public office, I mean, do you think there's a war on women out there, and what do we need to do about that?
There's definitely a war against women. Some of it is underground. Some of it is very blatant. And part of it is because there's not enough women that are engaged in government. I mean, let's look at the U.S. House of Representatives. There's 435 members, and there's only 76 women out of 435. No wonder where our issues are not getting heard. When you have men discussing women's health issues and not one woman, what is wrong with that picture? How can they address the women's issues without having a woman there? Now, here you have, this is 2012. You would think we have gotten enlightenment. I recently received an email from a man who said that I should not be in politics because I am a woman, and women shouldn't be in politics. They should be in the house making sure that dinner is ready for their husbands. And I didn't know whether to get mad or to laugh. And this is 2012, and yet we have people that are thinking in those terms that women are still second-class citizens, and we are treated like second-class citizens. I have four sons, and I want them to have the best they can have. But at the same time, I think that we should all be treated the same. I hate to be able to look at something and make a difference because somebody is a man or a woman. I would love to see the day when that doesn't matter anymore. But right now, it is mattering because there is a war on women, whether we want to admit it or not. And this is why we just stepped up to the plate. We need to make sure that we're at the negotiating table and having our voice heard. Our voices aren't being heard. We need to get involved and be heard, and that's one of the reasons why I'm also involved in making my voice heard, making all these women's voices heard, and stop this current assault on women, and let's get back to all being treated equally.
To narrow that question to a more specific point, the mandate regarding contraceptive coverage, that became a flashpoint for which President Obama proposed a compromise for religious institutions. What did you think about that?
Well, you know, again, I'm a numbers person. I look at the stats, and 80% of Catholic women use contraceptives. So if that is true, then that means that they're going to have to pay extra to go out there and get their contraceptives, because they're not going to be able to get it from the, you know, their, if they work for their, for a religious organization. And there's a lot of non-Catholic women that are working for these organizations. I just don't think that it's fair. I think that we're all are free to choose whatever religion and practice, whatever our beliefs are. But when you make an exception, then you really are making it hard for, especially women. I mean, there's no exclusion for men. I mean, you know, they can use the Viagra, and it's under the health plan, and there's no problem with that. But yet, when it comes to women's, there's a problem. And I don't buy that.
Okay. District 35 was, to say the least, one of the points of contention during the litigation over, you know, the congressional map, whether it violated the Voting Rights Act and whatnot. This district was, you know, created partly, I mean, it was originally drawn like that, but it was accepted into the interim map as a compromise between, as a compromise agreement between the Texas Latino Redistricting Task Force plaintiff and the Attorney General. Many of the other plaintiffs in the redistricting litigation didn't care for this compromise. They didn't like the way Travis County was carved up, and they thought that the plaintiffs could have gotten more than the state was offering. Do you believe that the interim congressional map, as it is drawn, fairly reflects Texas's minority growth? And, you know, do you believe that the plaintiffs collectively got a good deal or could have gotten more?
Well, you know, it is. If you look at the map, it's kind of a strange looking district, and I don't know any other district that has two major cities in the district. You've got San Antonio, which is the seventh largest city in the United States, and you've got Austin, that is, I believe, the 11th largest city. So you've got two major cities in one district. Now, if you look at the stats, then obviously it's a basically about a 68% minority district, and it was drawn to be a Latino majority district. Now, as far as fairness is concerned, it's rather unusual for a city like Austin to be drawn into so many portions. And I don't know whether this will stay. Could it be better? Of course. I wish it had been better. I wish we had stayed with the way it was before. It certainly would have been easier for me. But we got to go with what we got. And I would venture to say that there is that possibility that it's going to change the next go-around.
Okay. You are running in this race against Representative Lloyd Doggett, who's...
No. Let me correct you. He's running against me.
All right, fair enough.
This is a new district. I filed in 35 the first time. I never wavered. I have stayed here. He elected to come here, so he's challenging me.
All right, fair enough. You know, he's been in Congress for a while. He's one of the few Texas Democrats that has seniority left. You know, what's what's the argument for replacing, you know, a longtime progressive champion with seniority with a freshman?
Who happens to be a champion also. I've been a champion of people my whole life, you know, whether when I was in private practice, whether I was a Democratic Party chair, whether I was a state rep, whether I was a Texas collector, and the various nonprofit boards that I've served, I've always been the champion of people and women and children. That's a given. I think, you know, as far as the seniority, it really doesn't count anymore. I mean, all you have to do is look at my opponent's history. He's been there 18 years, and he's never has been chair of any other committee. So what good is the so-called seniority? Again, that was the same argument that I had when I first was elected to the state house. And I proved them wrong. I proved that I could do more work and get more results being a freshman than being a veteran. So I think that argument doesn't hold water. And I also think that what I'm hearing out there is that people are ready for change. You've got Congress that has an 8% approval rate. Obviously, people are a little disappointed with what's happening in Washington right now, and they're ready for a change. And I feel that I represent the new Texas.
Okay, and so to sum it up, give me your best elevator pitch. Why should people vote for you, Sylvia Romo, to be the first representative in District 35?
There are many reasons, but some of them is because anytime that you're at a negotiating table, whether it's in government, whether it's business or anything, you know, if everybody's sitting there is thinking the same way, that means that only one person is thinking. And so, by the same token, when you have members of Congress who the majority of them are white male, then obviously they're not getting the full perspective that they should. So consequently, you're not getting things done. There's been no results because very few people are thinking. We need the fresh perspective from a woman, the fresh perspective of a Latina, the fresh perspective of a CPA. There's only 8 CPAs, by the way, in Congress. The perspective of being a mother, a grandmother, coming from humble beginnings. You know, my opponent is a multimillionaire. The district, I represent my district. I'm one of them. They're one of me. So I'm going to bring a different perspective that is sorely lacking. If we're talking about really representing the face of this district, then I'm better suited than my opponents.
Okay. Sylvia Romo, thank you very much for talking to me today.
You're quite welcome. Quite welcome.